checking in with David Roth of Defector, who I believe is right here in the state of Maine. Hello, David.
Hey, man. How are you? I am in southern Maine, but we left the house today. It was really exciting. There's been a lot of really interesting developments for us.
Well, one of them I wanted to bring up is that you had bread from a can. How was that experience for you?
We've done it before. This was we tried to cook some of my late mother-in-law's recipes on Christmas, and so that wound up with us making baked beans in a bean pot, and you know, just generally, my wife is actually from here, so she wasn't totally faking it. I was faking it hard. But yeah, we got some of that B&M brown bread with raisins, and I've had it a few times now, and I always like to sort of scandalize people with pictures of it because it is so unholy looking as it comes out of the can. But I'd be lying if I said I didn't love it. I think it tastes great.
I'm with you on that, and I prefer mine without raisins. But to each his own when it comes to delicacies like that.
Yeah, but to their solidified molasses tubes, well, it's just a matter of taste.
So how has your time been here in the quiet Pine Tree State?
It's been good. I'm glad we came up. I mean, we were really, anxious about should we do it and how is the best way to do it. And, we rented a car and, quarantined hard for 2 weeks before we came up. And my father-in-law did his best to do the same. And, I'm just glad that we're here. Like, this is an important thing for Kate's family. And, we got like maybe 36 hours of the cool wintry Maine Christmas aesthetic before it started raining and being 55 degrees for three straight days. But it's special for me. I don't really have a lot in the way of Maine folkways as a Christmas folkways as a Jewish person from New Jersey. Like I saw Oliver Stone's Nixon on Christmas Day with my dad. I guess that was a big one.
Wow. This is
better.
That could be a new holiday tradition. I like that.
Yeah, watching Paul Sorvino do a Henry Kissinger imitation. I don't know why everybody doesn't do that.
And there were some people was it Walter Matthau? What was he doing there exactly? Some people just seemed to wander through the film for no apparent reason.
But such great Oliver Stone stuff. I mean, JFK is the ultimate for that too, because he didn't even get good wigs for people when Joe Pesci was like, sure, all right, when do you need me? Like, put like a wig from like, Spirit Halloween on my head and make me speak in a Cajun accent for three scenes. That sounds great. JFK was weird because, like, I knew what those people looked like and sounded like,
right.
Like, and so some of them were good and some of them were James Woods, but it was still like exciting to see them trying.
Oh man. Well, so much to talk about here as we try and make some measure of sense out of 2020. But I think if we were to begin, a good place to start might be, God, I love Defector so much, but I think Barry Pachesky's wonderful piece on things that people got stuck in orifices this year, that might be the best summary of 2020.
It is. Every year he does it, and it is horrifying to read. Like, I seriously, physically find myself crossing my legs, taking breaks, like just in general, needing to sort of get in a much more comfortable physical space than really would need to be. But it is, there's something about just that parade of escalating idiocy and self-damage that really does have a 2020 feel to it.
Right, because it feels like the whole year was, in some measure, people sticking things where they don't belong.
Sticking things where they don't belong, and then, the best part of it every year, so this is something that Barry was doing going back to Deadspin, and it is exactly what it sounds like, but the notes are all from, doctor's reports, all publicly available stuff, and the best ones have, like, a story behind it.
Oh, yes.
Where it'll be like, I accidentally got a marble stuck in my ear canal, and so I was trying to get it out using pieces of notebook paper, and then the notebook paper got stuck, and then I went to the doctor. But it's always the explanation that does it for me.
I agree.
If someone was like, I'm intentionally into that, that's my kink, is putting a marble into my ear canal, but then being like, I was at home, I was just sort of trying to do something, and one thing led to another, and I had a marble and three sheets of notebook paper stuck in my
ear. I accidentally squatted in the shower, and
that's the one. Always, I feel like it must be bad enough to be a doctor in that situation where you're like, all right, I think I see the problem. And the guy's like, well, no, it's not what it looks like.
And you want to, if you have any kind of bedside manner, you know, you want to give them that fantasy. Let them think that you believe their story.
Yeah, I mean, it's, at some point too, like I really feel like there has to. It's like the polite thing to do is be like, "Oh, we see this all the time. This is very common. This is like one of the bigger risks of showering. This is why I advise all my patients not to do it." I don't know how you could play it off at some point.
Well, let's talk a little baseball. It's almost bizarre. It's otherworldly in 2020 that the Mets seem to have an owner who's actually thinking about what might be best for fans.
It's exciting. I mean, I feel like it'll get weird for him. The new owner is I guess I can call him a prolific financial criminal. He didn't admit to any wrongdoing, but he did pay $1 billion in fines and agree not to have his hedge fund anymore. But he had more than $1 billion to spare because he bought the Mets. And he so far seems to be making good hires and letting them do their job. And he's tweeting a lot, which is the sort of thing that is always, it's thrilling right up until it's not. You know, like, I think at this point, like, once you've had a major authority figure who tweets too much in your life, as everybody sort of has now for the last few years, part of me is just like, just send postcards, man. Like, you don't need to do this. But he cares, and they haven't done anything, you know, really mind-blowing yet. I mean, I think the San Diego Padres are on the verge of having more major transactions today than the rest of Major League Baseball's had all offseason. But the experience of having an owner who has enough money and it doesn't mind spending it on the team is that's a new one for me. I'm enjoying it.
NBA season got underway. It seems like we just wrapped up the previous one, but some interesting things already. Most of all to me was glancing, I think. I first saw it on Twitter last night. I wasn't watching the game, but to see that halftime score of the Clippers game.
Oh, my gosh, yeah. I mean, I didn't see it, but that was... It's one thing to be like, all right, Kawhi Leonard's not playing, which, you know, he wasn't playing in the game. They were down by 50 points at the half.
Yeah, it was nuts.
And that's just a team that's supposed to compete for a championship this year. I don't know. I'm kind of a Clippers fan. I went to school out there, and as a masochist, I would not permit myself to cheer for the Lakers. So it was like whatever team was on local TV. And that was some really miserable LA Clippers teams, like pre-Lamar Odom into early Lamar Odom, not a golden age by any stretch. But, you know, this was as good a Clippers roster, I think, going into, I guess really last year's was better. But going into this year, like, I did not anticipate that they would come out as discombobulated. But the whole league seems kind of off so far. Like, every game I've watched has been, like, weirdly more uncanny than the bubble games were. Like, because it's sort of, they're playing on the home courts. It sort of looks like it's supposed to look, but like everybody's just back rimming jump shots and getting hurt.
Yeah, you know, the Celtics surprisingly beat Milwaukee in their opening game, despite the fact that about a third of the roster is out. And then they just looked terrible against the Brooklyn Nets and have been completely flat ever since then.
Yeah, it's weird. I mean, I think they're going to be okay. I think it's just, you know, but a lot of the good teams, I mean, the Bucks got wiped out by the Knicks last night. And that's a team that, you know, the Knicks are not quite as bad, I think, as they were last year. I mean, they were appallingly badly coached at the start of the year and everything, but the Bucks should not be losing by 20 points to the Knicks. I mean, this really has that feeling. A lot of the baseball season felt like this at the beginning, too. And it did wind up with good baseball by October. But that first month just sort of had that feeling of, like, you know, third week of spring training quality baseball. And in this case, it's like a badly played NBA game or an NBA game where, like, guys are kind of, you know, nursing injuries and easing into it and all of that. Like, it's not great basketball. The college stuff has been way worse than I've seen too. I mean, it's just not a good year for it so far.
We're talking with David Roth of Defector here on Downtown. All right, let's take a step back if we can. We're almost ready to turn the page on the calendar. So what have we learned in 2020?
Wow. this is supposing that we learned anything.
Right.
This was as bad a year as I can remember. I mean, it was good for me in a lot of ways. I mean, we started a website. That was great, you know, like, but man, it's just really hard to sort of look at the country the same way as it was even, you know, I think if you were to go back 12 months, neither you nor I would have been especially sanguine on a possibility of 2020, but I sure did not anticipate it being like this. I would love to believe that there was some, you know, sort of broader understanding of the idea that all of our lives are interrelated in some way, you know, that like we live in a society, for lack of a less cliched phrase. But like, I feel like in many ways we missed that opportunity, you know, that like, or that at the very least that realization wasn't spread widely enough.
Well, I feel like where there are two camps, there are those who believe that and who live that through their actions. And then there's this group that I want to believe is fairly small, but vocal, that doesn't think that way at all.
Yeah, it's bizarre. I mean, and I feel like this has been the sort of the grim part of the way that the pandemic has kind of proceeded across the country, is that it's like, you know, the stuff that when I remember talking to you in March and April and, you know, what New York City was like, and it was very bad, you know, but it was also, New York City is not representative of any other place. I mean, honestly, like the neighborhood I live in isn't representative of New York City, but like that, I think it felt abstracted in a way to people because it was happening, you know, in this place that was often far away. And it just seems like now it is everywhere. And I don't know if that is a realization waiting to happen, or if it's just the sort of thing that, you know, I haven't read any of the big books about the 1918 pandemic, you know, the flu pandemic. But in many ways, it seems like the trajectory of that one followed, like that this one and that one sort of echo each other in ways that you'd hope that in 100 years, you know, 102 years, that people would be able to sort that stuff out. And yet it was the same sort of deal. I mean, that like people did lock down and then they got bored, and then like all these cities had big parades, and then people got sick again. Like we've invented more interesting entertainments than parades in the subsequent 100 years, but like it doesn't really seem like any of the other stuff has kept pace the way you might want.
We're days away, I assume this will happen, with the departure of Donald Trump from the White House. Some people seem shocked, but wasn't this always the way it was going to end?
Yeah, I was talking to my father-in-law the other day, was saying that he had been saying that years ago, and I think that he's correct. And, you know, I sort of always thought that it would end badly. I just didn't know exactly how it would go, you know, that like there was no way that this was going to end with like a dignified transfer of power. You know, that's just not the guy's move. But I don't think I expected it to be as clammy and pathetic as it is. And I think in some ways there's a relief in that. I mean, obviously there's tens of millions of people that believe that, you know, that this was stolen and that there's all kinds of stuff that we don't know and we need to look into, but they won't look into it because they're very unfair, you know, whatever. And I don't know how to talk to people like that, but I still have this feeling that if this had been closer, that it could have been like the 2000 election, you know, that like the machine that Republicans have, you know, that they kicked into action in Florida in 2000, would have gone into action in whatever one state it was needed in. But in this case, he just didn't run well enough. You know, I think that unless you're really on that Kool-Aid very hard, I just don't think that there hasn't been like a compelling case made. So it's just been this kind of like sad, bad faith clown show that's been going on. And I don't, you know, whatever, it doesn't make it any easier to take. But it is like funnier that it involves like Rudy Giuliani getting so upset that he farts during an open session of the Wisconsin state legislature. Like, that's the end that this administration deserves.
Well, and we often talk about some of the characters in Trump's White House orbit, but I think I'm more fascinated now by the other elected officials who have joined in this parade down the stretch. The people like Mo Brooks and you know, Tommy Tuberville, who is a United States senator. I can't even say the phrase without laughing.
It's unreal. There was somebody, the New York Times wrote a story about John Ossoff today that was talking about how thin his resume was. And he's very young, and he hasn't really done that much. But man, like Tommy Tuberville, like he's won one more bowl game than he's lost every place he's ever worked. The guy went to the Belk Bowl and lost at the Belk Bowl. That is a life achievement of him. Like that was like, you can't point to that much other stuff that he's done that qualifies him to be a senator. I mean, I happen to think very highly of the Belk Bowl, but this is like the idea that these guys are just in there kind of forever. Like there is something like weird about the electing somebody that like is just transparently not there to govern and is just there to like periodically go on TV and like do interesting things. theoretically, or like say inflammatory stuff that people react to. That doesn't, I mean, I don't know. I mean, I guess it's just that people don't really expect very much from their government at this point.
No,
so at some point, it's like, why not elect Tommy Tuberville, right?
And the only pleasure I take in this is watching, and it's beginning to happen more and more, watching them eat each other. That I truly enjoy.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's just, there's no like loyalty really built into any of this. Everybody's sort of there for their personal brand. And I feel like this is, you know, if left to their own devices, I do feel like most of the like Republican members of the House would just do like multi-level marketing schemes to each other. Like they would sell each other scammy vitamins. But that's like their real passion, is just kind of like getting over on other people.
Right.
But, you know, but they have to pretend to like vote on laws too in between that.
All right. I want to end on an up note here. And I was fascinated by this. And so I need to know more details about this YouTube channel your father-in-law was watching with dudes with metal detectors. Tell me more.
So I always love talking to you. It's one of the great treats of my life. One thing that I especially enjoy about it is that I am always forced to answer for one idiotic tweet every time I come on Downtown with Michigan.
No.
You read my tweet, my feed very closely. I appreciate it. It's good. This is like, honestly, my therapist should be doing it. So, my father-in-law has been absolutely crushing episodes of a YouTube show called Hoover Boys, which is a bunch of guys from Maryland with really strong Maryland accents and metal detectors who go out looking for old coins and other historic metal doodads in various different properties. Sometimes they go to England. Sometimes they go to the South. A lot of times they're just around the greater, you know, Maryland, West Virginia, Virginia area. And it is, like, some of them are firemen, some of them are off-duty cops. One guy doesn't want his face shown, so he's just rendered as, like, Mario from Super Mario Brothers. And I've only seen bits of it, but I hear it, because my father-in-law does not have the best hearing, so he's just watching on his phone full blast, and it is just metal detector sounds, and then these guys being like, holy, no way! Did you just find, like, a two-real coin? No way, bro! And, like, that is what it is. And I've gone over the course of 5 days, I've completely Stockholm syndromed my way into it. Like, now I love the Hoover Boys. I love their theme. Like, I want them to find all the coins that they want to find. Like, it went from at the beginning, me being like, there's not like a quieter way to listen to, because it's metal detector sounds. It's really hard to read when you're just hearing like in the background all the time. Probably hard to listen to too. I'm sorry about that. But over time, I've been like, they're so excited to find their coins. They seem like nice guys. They're always like supporting each other. So I'm like, the Hoover Boys are cool to me. I recommend it on YouTube.
I'm going for a search tonight, because in 2020, you find your pleasure where you can.
Absolutely true.
David, it's always a pleasure for us. Thanks so much for making a little time for us on your main excursion here. And we wish you a very, very happy new year and look forward to catching up with you in a much improved 2021.
Right on. And to you. We'll do better next year. Bye.
Sounds good. Thanks, David. David Roth of Defector with us on Downtown.